Love this podcast? Support it and sponsor today. Simply head to OzCastNetwork.com for details.
How powerful is the Cox Network? So powerful that one day the internet will let your doctor perform miracles from thousands of miles away.
Connecting to remote operating room.
Giving a whole new meaning to the term house call.
Operation complete.
The Cox Network. With gig speeds everywhere, it's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, bringing us closer. In Cox serviceable areas, speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms apply. Other restrictions may apply.
Yeah, just weird. Stuff you wouldn't think would happen in skateboarding. And the facts is this, boys. There's three sides to every story. There's my side, your side, and the truth.
Hiya, and welcome to the Curb Podcast. My name is Andrew F. Pierce, and this podcast is recorded in Boolu, Perth, Western Australia. Sovereignty never ceded. In this episode, I interview filmmaker Heidi Lee Douglas about her new film, Sucker. Written by Sushan Chambers and Lily Cheng, this neon-soaked action flick tells the story that spans decades, detailing the fury that rages between two feuding families in Western Sydney. Sucker is both a multicultural Romeo and Juliet-style revenge film with a touch of real-life events thrown into the mix. In this interview, Heidi talks about the importance of casting actors who could handle both the acting requirements as well as the fighting sequences that feature in Sucker, while also touching on the value of global appreciation of the banner term genre filmmaking when it comes to horror, action, and sci-fi films. Additionally, Heidi talks about the role that neon plays in her storytelling. Sucker is available on demand right now and is supported by Umbrella Entertainment. To listen to other interviews and read reviews, head over to thecurb.com.au. New podcast interviews appear each Friday, with bonus interviews appearing on Wednesdays. Here's the trailer for Sucker, followed by the interview with director Heidi Lee Douglas.
My time has nearly come, and your time is here.
The old dragon is dying. His troops are deserting him. Now is the time to strike. Mr. Bo Yang.
I came as a courtesy.
I'm not going to take over the business, Dad.
You are my son!
So you're going to go see your mother today?
You were the only good thing in my life growing up here.
I have only one son. You have only one child.
And my name's Bo, by the way. How would you like to have a coffee with me?
Is this the best pickup line you can come up with?
Asian parents just can't do anything to please them.
You can feel this is Hui. This is my sister, Fandy.
Do I know you?
No, I don't think so. In the
life, you're not your father.
What don't you understand? Dad's gone. They'll come after me and you.
I don't care what her background is.
I thought you might say that, so I did some digging around.
Who would have thought, Wasia? My son. With your only child.
Where is my daughter?
Everyone's actions make a difference. No matter how small.
Cut off the head of the snake for good. We can't change the beginning, being. We can change the ending.
What a great, entertaining film. There's a lot to be proud of there. We don't really get to see action films in Australia all too often, so it's nice to see something that really knuckles down and gets into the gritty aspect of it all. So congratulations. You must be very proud.
Thank you, Andrew. It was a challenging and rewarding experience to make Sucker.
Let's talk about that action to start off with as well, because it is such a major aspect of it. What I really appreciate is it's a little bit like musicals and dancing. We get head-to-toe choreography. We get to see everything that's going on. How important was that full-body experience of the fighting for you as a director?
Well, we cast people who had acting chops and fighting chops, basically. So that was a very key part of the process, was finding people who, when they sent us their audition tapes, sent us both some examples of how they fight or what their fighting experience was, as well as what their, you know, their good acting skills are. So that was key to casting. And then in terms of the shoot, we had a fight coordinator and a stunt coordinator to work alongside me to make sure that the fights were well choreographed, safe. And then the cinematographer and I were really making sure that we had the coverage so that we could get all the different angles and make that as impactful as possible to then bring into the edit. And then there was a whole journey in the edit about really pulling that together and using things like speed ramps to really heighten the fighting sequences. And of course, then you go into the sound post-production and you add all the thwacks and whacks and, you know, bring that to life. So it's a multi-step process to make it look seamless, basically.
What's the preparation time for that like as well? I imagine you do a lot of rehearsal for it. So as you're talking about trying to make sure it's as safe as possible, but yeah, what's that rehearsal period like for you?
So we had about a week with the fight coordinator, Blake Wells, to rehearse the sequences with the actors, the key action sequences, which was more time than we had to rehearse the actual drama. And a lot of those fight sequences actually had to change when we got on set because the location would be different to the way that they'd rehearsed the location in an empty room. So there was an adaptation process on set. But I think the good thing about the rehearsal process is it allows the actors to trust each other and create chemistry and then be able to quickly use like a shorthand intuitive response on set to get the same feeling as they were trying to achieve in the rehearsal sequences.
Let's talk about working alongside Sushan Chambers and Lily Cheng as well. They're the co-writers on this film. Can you talk about what the collaborative process was like there? And I understand that the story is also partially inspired by real life events too. Is that right?
Yeah, so Sushan Chambers is the producer. She's the co-writer, co-creator, and one of the lead actors. So she was wearing many hats and she's a multi-talented or a slashy, as you might say. Not a slashy, a slashy. But so so Sushan Chambers was inspired by a real life event when she was in China as a student. She was living amongst basically two warring families in China. So she wanted to retell that story, but set in Western Sydney. So I came on board as a director and she just had an embryonic idea. And she'd had made a web series called The Wild Orchards, which I watched, it was quite low budget, but the best things about it were the fight sequences. And she'd worked with one of the fight coordinators from Star Wars on that. So I could see what the ambition was, even if she hadn't had the budget to pull it off for that particular project. So I had already worked in elevated genre and I'd been making the elevated horror shorts. And I'd been exposed through that to lots of really dynamic films at international genre film festivals and wanted to do something really out of the box in Australia. You know, I still am working in the horror space, but this project that brought together kind of my love of films like Kill Bill and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, that they're really strong female protagonists, playful, funny, sexy, but with a lot of guts. So we worked together. So I'm credited as a co-creator because the project was developed over 5 years, basically. It was originally envisaged as a TV series, and this is a pilot for a TV series, and then evolved into a feature film and also an interactive web series. So there's an additional offering, which is an interactive web series on top of the feature film.
And it looks so good as well because of the choice of neon. And I'm curious if you can talk about that visual stylistic choice that you had there to make sure that it links throughout all the different stories in the film.
So often when you look at like a gangster noir thriller, which is basically what this film is, you get a dark, somber, you know, grey palette kind of world. But I was really inspired by Korean cinema and in particular a trip I'd made to the Bukyon International Fantastic Film Festival for my last short, Devil Woman. And in Seoul, you've got it's a busy city, the streets are hazy with smoke, it was summer, yellow light, and then at night you've got multi-story neon lights everywhere. People are out drinking beer, Korean barbecue to 2 o'clock in the morning. And the night is beautiful, this neon world. And so I said to Casimir Dixon, I wanted to recreate that neonness, neon noir, or it was what I was calling it, in set in Western Sydney. So we also built on real life locations, like Burwood, that cafe where the kind of romantic sparks start flying while they're eating noodles. Those neon signs are already up there. Like that set, you could not, like if we didn't have the budget to create that, but it's a real life place. So we went hunting for places that already had the essence of what we were creating, and we were just building on that really. And Kaz and I really talked about color a lot. So we had a very strong color palette. So we had a yellow earthy tone world for the kind of street like vendors, the shop owners. So that was like earth color palette. And then for Sushan's world, Wasia, her character, who's a nightclub owner, you know, the feminist color palette of like rich purples and greens and velvets and textures. And then the Yang family, who are like the top dog gangster family, were inspired by the high-rise skyscrapers in Parramatta. And so they're like blue, you know, I really lent into a blue cool palette for them. And even as their costumes, like all these colors were carried over into costumes and props, but their colors, instead of wearing traditional black, they wore a lot of blue and white and gray.
As you're talking, like it is so important to have stylistic things that set these different characters apart. But I'm curious about building that on a low budget or a lower budget than maybe, you know, Hollywood films would be able to afford to have, you know, build all of that completely. But you would have to do that organically in some capacity. How important is that for you?
Oh, look, I think it's vital because it makes the film cohesive. It creates a world that, you know, and you don't, I wouldn't expect everyone to pick up on my choices around the color palette, but it will give you an emotional feel. And that's what you want, is you want the audience to have an emotional feel and to feel the contrast between the different worlds and get a sense of the characters through the background of the world that you've created visually and the color palette and the lighting and everything. So we worked with a team. You know, you work with a production designer, you work with the makeup artist, you work with the costume designer, you work with the cinematographer. You are, as the director, it's your role to work between all the different departments and brief them and explain to them why these are the choices that you've made and bring them on board. And then really great professionals will elevate that to the next level. So they'll then make their offerings. And that's when it's really exciting, because like Holly Jane Cole, the costume designer, would then, you know, I told her the brief of the kind of clothes that I wanted Hui to wear, the kind of cute, that are Japanese manga inspired outfits. And then she'd turn up with these, you know, cute as a button outfits. And, you know, we just, those moments, you're like, yeah, this is going to look awesome. And that's really exciting.
I understand there's also a dual meaning of the title of Suka. Can you talk about the different translations for what the word actually means?
So Suka means love in Malay and bitch in Russian. That very much sums up the feeling of the film. So it's both a romance film and a film full of kick-ass boss ladies who are like trying to set the streets straight, but also some of the boss ladies are pretty bent.
Yeah, they're really awesome. And, you know, obviously quite a variety of different people who are both good and bad and complicated in between and stuff like that. But they're all very much leaning into the stylistic choices of genre filmmaking. And I know that that's like a banner thing of talking about action and horror and thriller and sci-fi and all this kind of stuff, but it's all bundled under that banner of genre filmmaking. And you're talking about doing horror shorts before, and I'm curious about what genre filmmaking means to you as a director.
That's a really good question. I mean, I think before I started going to genre film festivals internationally, I wasn't even really aware that there was this umbrella term for genre films. And my first horror short went to Fantastic Fest in Austin, Texas. And I didn't even know about Fantastic Fest. Like I'd asked a friend who'd made a film in a horror short, you know, where would she submit this film? Because my background was documentary. So I'd made documentaries for 20 years, but I'd been writing a man-eating mermaid horror story throughout that time. And just never had time to really work on my drama film. So I made this horror short. It got Screen Australia backing. And then I went to Fantastic Fest to represent it at its premiere, and this whole world opened up to me, and this whole audience, really, this audience, especially in North America, is huge for genre films. And so I've been lucky enough to then go over to Fantasia and BFAN, like I mentioned, and saw so many great films, you know, and really saw that these, you know, films from Korea play beautifully in Canada, and Canadian films play beautifully in Korea. And there's a kind of love language of genre films, and that transcends from horror, from slashy horror to zombie comedies, all the way to action films, that is international. Like, there is a massive audience for genre films. And for me personally, it was like finding my people. And I hadn't really found my people in Australia in terms of filmmaking in the genre space. So, you know, I think it can be quite isolating, being so geographically isolated. You know, where my female horror director friends, they bounce over between North America and Europe and the different film festivals, and it's much harder, especially when you're, you know, on a modest income, to do that, which most filmmakers are, let's be honest. So yeah, so I see like Sukra under that umbrella of genre films, and hopefully genre audiences across the world and in Australia will love it. I mean, I know genre audiences overseas also have a massive respect for Australian genre films as well, and that's nice to see, because I don't think we necessarily in Australia kind of embrace our own genre filmmakers as much as people overseas do.
As we're leading to wrapping up, of course, where can people see Sukra in the future?
So there's a few places this Sukra can be viewed. In just a few days, really, on the 4th of October, Sukra is going to be released on video on demand on Google, YouTube, iTunes, Fetch, Sky, and Amazon. And then we also have a major broadcasting network in Australia on board to show the film, but more news about that to come. And then the interactive version will be released subsequently.
Well, congratulations once again. It's a lot of fun to watch, and I really hope that you get to either continue on this story in a, you know, some capacity, or continue doing action, because it was really wonderful to be able to see that in an Australian context. So lots to be proud of for you and the rest of the team. Congratulations.
Thanks so much for your support, Andrew. I really appreciate that.
Love this podcast? Support it and sponsor today. Simply head to OzCastNetwork.com for details.